You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Mitt Romney's a felon? The Wisconsin election was stolen with rigged machines? What? Boy, what a weird day. Greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. I got this in email this morning, actually, from WisconsinWave.org, and we're going to try and get somebody on the program later on, probably in our third hour today, from this group. Here's what they have to say. In fact, they're trying to raise money to pay for this hand recount all around the state. You know, there's been all this sturm and drang in Wisconsin about how tight that one senatorial race was, where the Democrat ended up winning when they did the recount, and the Democrat still won after the recount. And I can find a bunch of right-wing sites that are like, looks like these bags of ballots were opened and tampered with, you know, the kind of old-fashioned voting fraud stuff. People were voting on paper ballots, but they were counted by machines. Like those test-taking machines, but they're still machines, and they're programmed by the voting machine companies, and there's a fair amount of evidence that those machines are just as hackable as any other machine. And then the results of those machines get sent into central tabulating machines, and that's what Bev Harris and Howard Dean hacked on national TV on Tina Brown's Topic A with Tina Brown program when Howard Dean filled in for her back about 5 years ago, whenever it was. And, you know, in 90 seconds, they hacked a Diebold tabulator. Now, that wasn't the machine on which you vote. That was the machine that takes the totals from all the machines, which could include these kinds of machines that they use in Wisconsin. So, anyhow, all the right-wingers are like, oh, there's something wrong here. And now progressives are starting. A grassroots coalition, which includes the Wisconsin Wave, has formed, WisconsinWave.org is their website, has formed to verify the accuracy and integrity of the election results. This is amazing. These concerns, okay, first of all, they point out the exit polls were showing right up until 8 p.m. that it was a 50-50 race. This was the Scott Walker recall. That Tom Barrett may well, you know, the mayor of Milwaukee may well end up being the next governor. And then, like, you know, 20, 30 minutes after the, you know, with only a quarter of the precincts reporting, the networks say, Scott Walker won. Look at those numbers. So then they had this official count that was 53% Walker, 46% Barrett, while the exit polls were showing 50-50. So how do you account for a 6-point swing when exit polls and vote totals in the United States right up until 1998 were always within a half a percent, at the most a percent, typically a tenth of a percent? They call elections in most European countries, in Germany, for example, they call elections the same day of the election, even though it takes 3 days to count them, because they have exit polls. The exit polls are never more than a tenth of a point off. When the former Soviet Republic of Georgia had an election that we all thought was a little weird, or many people in the world thought was a little weird, you know how they proved, you know how they called for a recount, or a re-election, actually redo the election? Was because the exit polls didn't match the results. We did that with Georgia. We did it with another one of the former Soviet republics. I mean, this is all around the world. We, the United States of America, we go in and say, let's have a count, let's have exit polls to verify whether the count on the election is accurate. And if there's more than a couple of points difference, then, hey, there's something funky going on here. Well, there was a 6-point difference in Wisconsin between the exit polls and the actual result. And as they note over at WisconsinWave.org, these concerns were amplified when citizen observers monitoring the Racine Senate recount, and this is the one that they just recounted, and they said, oh, yeah, hey, look at it, the Democrat actually won. Now, if the Democratic senator won, why didn't the Democratic gubernatorial candidate win? Well, good question. So anyhow, these concerns were amplified when citizen observers monitoring the Racine Senate recount decided to also double-check the gubernatorial race. The results were extremely disturbing. In the Racine precincts where observers were stationed, statistically significant differences were found between the recounted totals and the official election night totals. You get this now? We're talking the official election night totals, and then they take the exact same pieces of paper and recount them by hand, and they get a different number than the machine that counted it first said happened. And here's where it gets even more weird. Even more troubling, in every case, these disparities benefited Walker over Barrett. Now, if you had random errors, if you had funky machines, if you had, somebody dropped a pile of ballots on that, whatever. In precinct after precinct after precinct, you would expect, okay, this one is off by a percent this way. This one's off, in favor of Barrett. This one's off by a percent in favor of Walker. It all kind of comes out in the wash because the machines are not good at reading the ballots. But when every single one produces, when you hand recount the vote and compare it with the official total is higher for Scott Walker and the hand recount is lower for Scott Walker, you got to ask, what's going on with the official ballot? So these guys over at WisconsinWave.org/handcount, you can see it. It's right on their homepage at Wisconsin Wave. They're suing the state. They're saying to the state, you got to hang on to these ballots because we want to count them by hand. And there are a bunch of precincts, largely Republican precincts, that are saying, no, we're going to destroy them within 2 weeks. The law allows us to. So they're trying to raise enough money to actually hang on to these ballots so that they can recount them. You recall when the Florida ballots were recounted in the 2000 election, which was handed off to George W. Bush by the United States Supreme Court, by five justices on the United States Supreme Court. When the Supreme Court of the state of Florida said every single ballot in the state needs to be recounted, that was eventually done. It took a year. New York Times, Washington Post, USA Today, all these news organizations, Associated Press, they all did it together. And the New York Times found, now this was in November of 2001, a month after 9/11. The New York Times reported that by any measure, over ballots, over chads, under chads, dimpled chads, pimpled chads, hanging chads, whatever you want to call it, Al Gore won Florida. In other words, the Supreme Court handed the election to George W. Bush. So, something weird went on in Florida. And that doesn't even consider the 80,000 African Americans who got knocked off the voting rolls because they had names that were similar to felons in Texas. I mean, the Republicans, it seems to me that the Republicans can't win an election without playing games somehow, whether it was Richard Nixon blowing up LBJ's negotiations with the South Vietnamese to end the war in Vietnam that we've just now learned about in the last year or so when the LBJ library finally released the tapes, whether it was Ronald Reagan's campaign manager, Bill Casey, cutting a deal with the Iranians to hold on to the hostages until the election of 1980 in exchange for the United States selling them weapons because they had, the Shah had all this American-made weaponry. They needed spare parts. They needed new parts, new weapons. Whether it was George W. Bush having the election handed to him by the United States Supreme Court. Please tell me one time in my lifetime when a Republican actually legitimately won an election. I think maybe the only one would be Eisenhower.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And the bigger picture is, what are we going to do about these voting machines? I'll rant about that when we come back.
Just a push of a button, just a touch of a screen. Welcome to the future. Come try our voting machine.
So how did Wisconsin really vote on June 5th? You know, my I have a concern about this. I've been writing about this since 2001 or 2002. If you go, search my name and elections or voting machines, and you'll find these pieces that I was writing back before I was doing a radio show. I'd been on this topic. And my argument is two parts. One, obviously, there's no such thing as a secure computer technology. Don't believe that? Ask like the FBI or the CIA who had their websites hacked by Anonymous. I mean, there's just no such thing, right? I mean, you can, and on top of that, I mean, we're not talking about multi-million dollar, computer technologies here. We're talking about, $3,000 slightly modified Windows machines with touch screens or, as just plain old, Windows machines, with a Windows operating system. And then on top of that, you got this program, this proprietary program that runs for the tabulators. I mean, that's the way that Bev Harris and Howard Dean hacked that Diebold machine on national television in 90 seconds was they went into the Windows operating system. They didn't go into the program and hack the program. They didn't have to. They simply went into Windows. You go into Windows and here's the files, the tabulator files with the totals. Open up one of the files. Take 500 votes out of Lex Luthor's category and put it into Howard Dean's category, and poof, you've changed an election. You close the files back up, you go out. Now, see, you did all this in Windows. You just open these files with, like, Notepad or something. Move the numbers around, and then you go out of Windows, and there's no trace that you were ever there, because when you open back then it was called the GEMS system. I don't know if it still is, but when you open the vote tabulator program, it notices whether it has been opened recently. Well, it hadn't been. So, A, I've got a concern about the fact that we're really voting on Windows machines. I mean, seriously? And the average age of the volunteers who are working in the polls and is 70 right now. It's over 70. These are people who came of age 30, 40 years ago, 50 years ago, when civic duty was a high value. This was before Reagan came along and said, no, government is evil and greed is good and only corporations are wonderful. So these are people who came of age before 1980 who actually believed that volunteering to help something like the elections was your civic responsibility. I remember as a little kid, my mom sitting there, I couldn't vote. I was a little kid. I was standing there. They had the tables set up, these 3x6 foot tables that you use in the elementary. This is in the elementary school where I went to school, and I stood there for hours watching my mom and she had the voter book, and people would come up and say, "Hi, I'm Joe Blow," and she'd open the book and she'd find their name and she'd have them sign and she'd compare the signature, and if it was the same, then she'd say, "Okay, go vote." And then they would step behind her and they voted on these machines, actually. These mechanical machines. But you could walk around the back of the machine and you could see all the levers and things, all the gears. You could see how they added the numbers up. It was totally transparent. Not only that, the machines were owned by the government. So it was a completely transparent process. These were literally mechanical, like levers that you pulled. Well, now these voting machine companies have figured out a way to not have levers anymore. No. We've got bits and bytes, and you can't see them, by the way. They all happen inside a little tiny chip. And the programming is proprietary. So that's my first concern about voting machines, which is why, by the way, the government of Ireland, and we reported on this story last week, the government of Ireland is selling the voting machines that they bought back in 2000. They used them once in the election in 2002, and they were horrified by the result. Why they're selling their voting machines for scrap metal right now. The second reason, and frankly, I think the more important reason, although I'm not a fan of being able to hack an election, I don't think that's a good thing. But even worse, the biggest picture on this thing is that what we have done by having private for-profit corporations count our votes in secret even if it wasn't in secret. By having private for-profit corporations count our vote, is we've privatized our vote. They turn it into a profit center for some corporation who's more interested in enhancing their profits. And which party typically is more sympathetic with corporations that want to enhance their profits versus, say, hey, let's raise the corporate tax back up to where it was during the Johnson administration so that we can actually have a great society again? So we've privatized the beating heart of democracy. You know, this is, frankly, the biggest argument, is the commons argument. The reason why our government was created was to oversee the commons. We, the people, right? We got together to ensure that all of the things that are necessary for life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, the commons, could be protected and administered appropriately. And the way that we, the people, tell our elected representatives how to administer the commons is by the vote. So you could say of all the commons, the most important one is the government itself that we own in common, because that administers everything else. And the most important part of the government itself, of that commons, is the vote, because that's the mechanism by which we tell our government how to behave. And you're seriously going to tell me that we turned that over to private, for-profit, and in the case of Diebold and ES&S, openly Republican-leaning corporations? Really? We got a big problem in this country. Check out WisconsinWave.org. See what they're doing.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
That's WisconsinWave.org. Yes, I sent them a contribution this morning. I think this is a big deal.
Home folks think I'm big in Detroit City.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Laura in Chicago listening to WCPT. Hey, Laura, what's up?
Yeah, hi, Tom. I am a member of the Illinois Ballot Integrity Project, and we've been on this issue since 2004, before the second stolen election of George Bush.
Right.
And we several of us knew that the Wisconsin election was probably rigged, and we called up to the Dems up there, the Wisconsin Dems, SEIU, a bunch of the organizations up there, and said, do a recount. Because exactly what you stated, and that was because the exit polls were different than the actual final result. And
right.
Also, remember, did you hear about Command Central?
No.
This was a two-man corporation in a storefront in Minnesota that was given the concession to write the software for the counting of the votes in 30% of the counties in Wisconsin.
Oh, my.
And they represented I can't remember which electronic machine company, but they were trying to also trade in some of the Wisconsin counties two optical scans. They were going to give them one touchscreen machine for two optical scans. They were trying to make a trade.
Incredible.
And so when you see that happening before, you know that they're up to no good. There's no question about it.
Yeah.
But I want to really correct some things, okay? Because we went into Ohio for the recount after the second Bush stolen election, and the second Bush stolen election was really stolen. Mm. We think that 7 million votes were flipped electronically in 11 states in 2004.
Yeah, that's the redshift. That's where you saw the difference between the exit polls and the actual counts.
Right, and the MO that we saw in that election was that they made the red counties redder.
Yeah.
That's where they put, because who's going to check, right?
Right.
And so one of the things, we went into Ohio and we were doing helping the Green Party and the Libertarians and John Conyers do, you know, the hearings and all of that kind of stuff. And we went to Washington. Now, the final arbiter of a stolen election is not the Supreme Court.
It's Congress.
It, Yes, it's Congress. It's in the Constitution.
Right.
They get to decide up or down.
Laura, I have to ask you to wrap this up because I've got a guest on hold.
Okay, the validity of the electors. And both in 2000 and 2004, we went to Washington and we asked for them to throw out the electors in Florida in 2000 and 2004.
Yeah.
And I would love to tell you the story about what happened in Washington in 2004.
Yeah.
I'd love to tell you that story.
Well, Laura, call again later or on another day and we will revisit this, okay?
Okay.
Because it sounds like a good one. Thank you very much. But you're right. The 2004 was a very, very stinky election. And strange things are happening. Speaking of strange things happening in democracy in general, Reverend D. Alexander Bullock is back with us, the president of Rainbow Push Detroit, president of the NAACP Highland Park branch. RainbowPushDetroit.org is the website. Reverend, welcome back to the program.
Thank you for having me. So good to be back.
Thank you for joining us. I understand that Rainbow Push in Michigan has a Crusade for American Parent and Youth March coming up August 25th. You want to tell me about that?
Definitely. We are marching in Detroit on August 25th, beginning at 12 noon, against the three basic axes of evils in Michigan, which is senseless violence, voter suspension, and massive inequality. Until we stop the violence and bring the jobs in and take the guns out, and at the same time rebuild the civic capacity of citizens so that they believe in the democratic process and we strengthen their right to vote and not minimize it, we will continue to see the systemic problems that we're seeing in Detroit, in Michigan, and around the nation.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. So the march is on August 25th. Publicize this, point this out. There's a Facebook also, Rainbow Push Detroit is the Facebook link. RainbowPushDetroit.org is the website. And what's the current status of the efforts of the governor, Rick Snyder, the Republican governor of your state, of my state, where I grew up? I lived there till I was 27, state of Michigan. I was born in Michigan. What's the current state of the efforts of that governor to basically undo democracy and replace democratically elected officials with his handpicked cronies?
Well, you know what? This is another reason why we're marching on August 25th. While we applauded Governor Snyder for vetoing the voter integrity bills, we've seen the same Snyder administration, the Court of Appeals, and the Board of Canvassers, and the Secretary of State, I might add, all work together to limit our access to deciding whether or not we want emergency management to be a public policy in the state of Michigan. After turning in the signatures, and we appreciate being able to come on your show and talk about that, we turned the signatures in. The signatures were certified by the Secretary of State, and then a challenge was levied. And so after turning them in, the referendum still isn't on the November ballot. The Court of Appeals said it was a 14-point font technicality that was going to keep them off the ballot. Turns out they ruled that that was not the case, and they demanded that the Board of Canvassers put the referendum for Public Act 4 on the ballot. And still, to this day, the referendum for Public Act 4 is not on the ballot. Now, why isn't it on the ballot? It's not on the ballot because as soon as the referendum gets on the ballot, all emergency managers are suspended until the people vote. That means if it were to go on the ballot today, then from today to November, all of the emergency managers, the emergency manager in Flint, the emergency manager in Detroit Public Schools, the emergency manager in Michigan Heights, the emergency manager in Benton Harbor, would be suspended.
So then, in all probability, what they're going to do is they're going to wait until the very last possible minute to put that on the ballot. They are going to put it on the ballot, right? They're required by law to do this.
You know what? They're required by law to put it on the ballot. Of course, that hasn't meant much in Michigan lately, but we believe it's going to get on the ballot. But as you say, I think you're right about that. They're going to try to wait until the last minute because they don't want anything to come in and mess up their plans for emergency management.
Right, because the whole emergency manager thing from the Republican point of view is an opportunity to basically loot these cities, sell off and privatize everything from the schools to the public parks, as has famously been done in Benton Harbor, where you had this beautiful public park and it's been turned into a golf course. I mean, this is all about looting Michigan by the Republicans.
That's right. That's right.
And they want to keep up looting it. I mean, there's some money to be made here.
Come on. You know what? It's amazing that you say that, and people would not believe it. But you're exactly right. This is about turning the state of Michigan into a flea market or a swap meet, and we can put emergency managers in cities and school districts. We can take away people's voice. We can take away their vote. We can steal their assets. We can bust the unions, and we can do all of that, and then maybe potentially deny citizens the right to decide whether or not that should happen in their own state. I wouldn't believe it unless I was living it.
Yeah. So in Michigan, are there printed ballots? I mean, is there a – if the election is November, what, the first Tuesday of November, I don't know what date it is this year, but whenever that election is, let's say it's November 5th or whatever, can they just, like, wait until 2 weeks before that to print the ballots, or do they have electronic voting machines? Do they wait until the day before to program them? I mean, how do they – what defines this is now on the ballot, therefore the emergency managers are suspended?
We have until August 27th for this to be on the ballot. If
it is
not certified by the Board of Canvassers by August 27th, then it will not make it on the November ballot. So we are – feverishly pushing for the Board of Canvassers, the Court of Appeals, or the Michigan Supreme Court, or the Secretary of State to do the right thing. And in fact, I think we've got a big protest in Lansing that we're preparing for in the next coming weeks, because obviously the deadline is ticking. And if the
state they're going to take this thing to the Michigan Supreme Court?
I think this thing is going to the Michigan Supreme Court. There was a challenge, an appeal made by the Citizens for Financial or Fiscal Responsibility. And even though the Court of Appeals already said this thing should go on the ballot, the Secretary of State said this should go on the ballot, the Board of Canvassers refuses to meet. It looks like we're headed to the Supreme Court. Now, mind you, we've got until August 27th to get this on the ballot, and so the timing of this is so crucial. I've never seen the law used in this way in lockstep with a partisan political party's position. I've never seen this happen before, but it looks like the law has actually been co-opted by the Republican Party in Michigan to deny the citizens of Michigan the right to decide whether or not emergency management should be public policy in Michigan.
Well, and they certainly did that with, you know, this immediate effect provision that is unconstitutional, where they passed all these laws a year or 2 years ago and then put them into immediate effect when they didn't have the supermajority that was necessary to do that. It's really quite extraordinary, Reverend Bullock. We're talking with Reverend D. Alexander Bullock. He's the president of the Rainbow Push Detroit and the president of the NAACP in Highland Park. RainbowPushDetroit.org, the website. There's a Facebook page, Rainbow Push Detroit. The big gig is August 25th, the Crusade for American Parent and Youth March. And we just have a few seconds left. Is the Michigan Supreme Court as partisan as the U.S. Supreme Court?
The Michigan Supreme Court is dominated by the Republican Party. Let me say that again. It is dominated by the Republican Party.
Scary
news. So we could lose. I mean, this is an all hands on deck, a last ditch effort. You know, this is fight to the finish in Michigan.
Yeah. And yeah, all hands on deck. There you go. RainbowPushDetroit.org. Check out the Facebook page, Rainbow Push Detroit. Check it out. Get involved. Whether you're in Michigan or anywhere in the United States, democracy is at stake in one of our states. Reverend Bullock, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much.
Good talking with you. And so whether it's in Detroit, whether it's in Wisconsin, whether it's in the state of Michigan, it's like democracy is under assault from Republicans.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
We'll be back in just a second. Senator Sherrod Brown is going to be with us later in the day. Dan Gaynor is going to drop by. And we're going to get somebody in our third hour on from this group in Wisconsin that's saying, whoa, wait a minute. Oh, this is hysterical. You know, the original Olympics were done in the nude. I mean, this is not a secret. You can find it in any history. But the original Olympics back, I mean, talking 3,000 years ago, right? The Greeks, their athletes, they performed in the nude. The human body is a marvelous thing. And everybody, you know, it's like, hey, let's go watch the naked people. So Harry Reid says, when the word came out today that the uniforms for our Olympians, the 530-some-odd, as I recall, people, Americans, who are going to compete in the U.S. Olympics, Let me get the right number here. Anyhow, the 530 of them, yep, 530 Olympians, that their uniforms were designed by Ralph Lauren. If he's really an American, shouldn't it be Lauren? In any case, no, it's he actually is American. I'm not sure he's still alive. Is Ralph Lauren, did he not go off in the last couple of years? Maybe he retired. I'm not sure. But anyhow, his company's still around, and they got the contract to design the Olympic wear, and they manufactured them in China. So Harry Reid says, and this is the Las Vegas Sun. There's a posting about it over at democraticunderground.com. He's really ripped about this. He says, put them in a pile and burn them. If they have to wear nothing but a singlet that says USA, that's what they should do. Singlet is old-fashioned talk for like a T-shirt or something, I think. I'm not sure. I'm not old enough to remember what a singlet was. I've seen them referenced in literature from the 19th century. But oh, man. Anyhow, 866-97-THOM, our telephone number. Reuben in Cincinnati, Ohio. Hey, Reuben, what's on your mind today?
Hey, how you doing, Tom?
Very well, thank you.
I have to make a comment about Mitt Romney's speech yesterday in front of the NAACP.
Sure.
I found it highly offensive. Here you have a plutocratic Republican and a Mormon whose church doctrine, historical church doctrine, discriminated against blacks.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's even more than that. I mean, their preachings are horribly racist.
Right. And he stands there in front of the NAACP saying that he is the best candidate for the black community, more so than the first black African-American president.
Right.
And he says there, look at me. I found that very, very arrogant. And then some commentators are saying that his speech was delivered to elicit the boos that he got, and that that was an orchestrated plan.
Yeah.
And if that is so, that shows the disdain they have for the black community, not only the black community but the minority communities across America.
Yeah.
That this plutocrat says that he is the best representative of the black community.
Well, I think that there's a very good chance, frankly, Reuben, that it was that he did say that knowing that he was going to get boos, and you know, he paused for a long time to let those boos so that there would be that moment, and now he's using that. He gave a speech today in Montana last night to a group of virtually all white people in Montana. And he boasted about the boos. He said, and I quote, he said, if they, presumably referring to African Americans, if they want more stuff from the government, tell them to go vote for the other guy, more free stuff. But don't forget, nothing is really free, end quote. So now Romney is campaigning to white people about the fact that African Americans booed him.
I have to say that any black community and the Latino community, that they are voting, if they vote for this man, they are voting against their self-interest.
I think white people are voting against their self-interest.
I agree with you. I agree with you.
Tell it.
But if Obama said that in front of a white community, they would have said that he was very arrogant also.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Very, very well said. Reuben, thank you so much for the call, and thank you for watching Free Speech TV. Joanne in Minneapolis. Hey, Joanne, thanks for listening to AM 950. What's up?
Hi, Tom. I wanted to follow up two things on the Wisconsin voter machines.
Mm-hmm.
One, I still remember that afternoon, Congresswoman Gwen Moore from Milwaukee talking to John Nichols. They were both so giddy they could barely contain themselves. And Gwen just said, you know, John, as well as I do, we have never lost an election when we've had this kind of turnout.
That's
in
right.
Maine and Milwaukee County.
That's right.
In addition to which, there's just something breaking on the Journal Sentinel, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel online. The headline says, Nicholas changed software before April election breakdown, saying that, but before the April election, when she had the mess with the Republican primary, it just said that she mysteriously changed something in her office's computer programming, according to a consulting firm's report released Tuesday. Only Nicholas knows what she did. The consultants can't figure it out. And she's not talking.
Who's Nicholas?
But Kathy Nicholas, the one who flipped the Kloppenburg election when she came up, she was the one that was massively under scrutiny, and she somehow still managed to retain her job, and she's still going to be counting votes in November. But my, get Brad Friedman on this story, because I think he cautioned everyone before Wisconsin and said, he, you know, he said there's no way you can actually paper tally everything in Wisconsin.
No, he's right. We've had Brad on this program many times. We'll have him on again. And Brad has been on this from day one. He's one of the very best reporters out there. Bradblog.com is his website, and you should check it out. Wisconsin Wave, though, I'm really impressed. Ben Mansky helped start this organization. These are serious folks. This is a, you know,
the Democracy Convention, I think.
Yeah, as well. Ben's a great guy. And WisconsinWave.org, they're on this, and they're trying to hand count these ballots to see if there is a difference between what the voting machine said or what the tabulators said the voting machine said. Because, see, there's a line that you run the paper through the machine, and the machine says, okay, here's, you know, you ran 1,000 papers through, and here's how many votes for Scott Walker there were. And then that machine communicates electronically with the tabulator, which is just a PC. And then the tabulator adds it all up and then says, here's the number. And that's what goes to the networks, to the news organizations, and they call the election. And as I pointed out, you know, in fact, I'll play the audio for it in our third hour. In our third hour, we're going to get somebody on this program from Wisconsin Wave who's on this topic. And we will play the clip of Howard Dean and Bev Harris on national television hacking a voting machine in 90 seconds. Joanne, thank you for the call.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
I have done some considerable ranting for many, many years on the topic of the corruption of our political system by cash. Wrote a book about it, about the Citizens United decision called Unequal Protection. And boy, are we seeing that played out big time in the state of Ohio. Ellen Ratner, who's a regular on this program and one of Louise and my dear friends, her, as she describes, her crazy cousin, Josh is running against Senator Sherrod Brown there. And Cousin Josh, it seems that the main thing to recommend him, he keeps screwing up politically and putting his foot in his mouth, and he's a rather incompetent Republican, as Republicans go. But he's got a lot of billionaire money behind him, and it's a scary thing that's happening. So I wanted to find out from Senator Sherrod Brown, who is the Democrat who is holding that seat right now, who is, you know, being on the receiving end of this avalanche of cash. I just wanted to get some feedback on what's going on. Senator Sherrod Brown is with us, the U.S. Senator, Democrat from Ohio. His website, brown.senate.gov. Senator, correct me or help me if I am saying or doing anything here that puts me or you in violation of election laws by commentary.
No, nothing. I mean, it's clear that every whether it's Citizens United or whether it's the Chamber of Commerce or the oil industry or the Wall Street banks, we know that that in the case in Ohio, they've spent $10.5 million outside, undisclosed, secret, special interest money. We're guessing it's the Wall Street banks, because I have a bill to break up the banks. We're guessing it's the oil industry, because I think we should end oil company subsidies. They're spending money in Ohio like no other state, $10.5 million in attack ads. And it really gives sort of, I heard your report on China a minute ago, and the Olympic close, it gives this money in campaign, gives a new meaning to the term Buy America.
Yeah.
They're trying to buy our government, clearly.
Yeah, or bought our government. I mean, this morning, related to a completely other story, I was on OpenSecrets.org, you know, the Center for Campaign Accountability or whatever it is that lists where people get their money from. And I was looking up Paul Ryan, and among his top 20 donors are Credit Suisse and USB, two Swiss banks. They're not even American companies, and they're major donors to Paul Ryan, who's sitting on $5 million in cash right now, you know, from foreign companies. I mean, tell me that our system is, my head is exploding here, Senator Brown. What are we going to do about this?
Well, our system is broken. I mean, one the only way to defeat this until we see a different Supreme Court and we need to win the presidential election and things then happen by natural cause over time. But the only way before that as a citizen is the kind of citizens movement you help or build in the show with Congressman Sanders, with Senator Sanders and others. We, on our website, SharonBrown.com, is we are getting, we have over 150,000 people have signed up, signed our petition to overturn Citizens United. Sure, it's SharonBrown.com. Sign up. Tell them you want to tell us, you know, what you think about this case. It's, we've just this clearly this huge amount of special interest dollars. It's going to affect elections. I'm going to fight back in my state. We want a collective bargain. We want on voter rights. We're going to win on women's rights and all the attacks. But it's increasingly hard because of this wash of special interest money that's undisclosed and unreported.
As a candidate running for office, how do you respond to defamatory or misleading attacks? And in particular, how do you do it when they have so much money that they're buying up all the TV time?
Well, you do it in part with a much better grassroots effort. We have almost 1 million people who are part of our email list, half of them from Ohio. So those, they're able to do kind of grassroots efforts, the likes of which we've never seen in Ohio. We have field organizers out knocking on doors, getting paid organizers with a lot of volunteers. We had a conference call the other day with 12,000 people on it who are helping the campaign. It takes that kind of effort to beat this kind of money machine, and I'm concerned all over the country for what this means. That this crowd, you're right. They've already got in some cases a long-term lease on a lot of elected officials, and I just don't want to see this get worse. And that's why fighting back is so important.
Yeah, and fighting back. Ohio has always been a pivotal state. It's a vitally important state now. Your race is a vitally important race, but I think even more so this. They're so naked about this. They've got this very weak candidate, and they're just basically saying, "Oh, we'll pour enough money in that we'll win because whoever spends the most." It doesn't always work out that way. I mean, California, where Meg Whitman came in and tried to fund her own campaign against Jerry Brown, didn't work out so well, and Carly Fiorina, people kind of saw through that. But I think in large part that was because the story of the California elections was, okay, Meg Whitman just threw in another $5 million of her own money. Oh, she just threw in another $6 million. Oh, it's Carly Fiorina just threw in another. Is that kind of story happening in Ohio? Is the kind of money that your opponent is throwing into this race, Senator Brown, and the sources of that money, are those becoming news stories, or are they being ignored by the media by and large?
I'd say they're not yet news stories, Tom, but we want them to be. I want people to look at these ads and say, why are they spending millions of dollars against Sherrod Brown? Who are these people? Right. Well, we don't really know for sure. The New York Times had an expose. They found out as much as you could, but it's not disclosed. But it's pretty clearly the oil companies, the big companies that outsource the Wall Street banks. So that we're going to work to make that the narrative as much as possible because we know Karl Rove is directing the choir. We know who his sponsors are. We know who these billionaires are. And we know they're billionaires. If they win, their side wins, and some billionaires invested $25 million, they're going to get tax breaks. They're going to get weaker environmental laws. They're going to get labor law rollback. But, we in Ohio know how to fight against this. What we did on collective bargaining last year was incredible that so many in the state did, fighting against the repeal, the rollback of voter rights. I mean, we've had some very successful grassroots efforts. We don't have money advantages very often, but we have way better grassroots efforts, and that's what we're counting on this year. But one other point there, they're so cynical now that they don't really much care what the print media says. They don't really much care what real news shows say. They don't even care when they get a false or a pants on fire rating from PolitiFact or factcheck.org. They're so cynical in the Karl Rove tradition that they're just going on the air with big lies over and over and a lot of money. That's why sign our petition at SherrodBrown.com and fighting back with a grassroots effort. It's going to win elections.
We're talking with Senator Sherrod Brown, SherrodBrown.com, his website. This is probably the most naked grab by big money going on in the United States right now, in the state of Ohio, this Senate race. And it's one that whether you're an Ohioan or any, if you're an American, you should be concerned about. And it just I'm stuttering here. I'm speechless. It just blows
that
my mind.
Doesn't happen much with Tom Hartman to be speechless.
Yeah, it does take a lot, frankly.
Your term. You're right. I mean, a naked power grab. You put a candidate up. Doesn't matter if he tells the truth. Doesn't matter if he knows very much. Doesn't matter if he has much experience. But if he's got 10.5 million behind him, and I would add, earlier in the week, we found out Karl Rove reserved another $7 million of TV time. So there, that's not counting their other groups. So it'll be $25 million outside spending at least by election day.
Amazing.
Maybe more. And you know, we have a lot less, but we've got. I mean, we clearly have way more passion and excitement on our side.
Yeah.
They've got money. I'd rather be in our position. Plus, I sleep better at night knowing that we're fighting against people that want to do bad things to our country.
Yeah, and the amazing thing is the guy who's orchestrating this is the guy who proudly was referred to as Bush's brain. It's like, you know, the Bush administration never went away. It's Karl Rove, the guy who was, you know, the man behind the Bush White House. I would think that in and of itself would be enough to give the creeps to everybody in Ohio, but apparently it doesn't. Senator Sherrod Brown, sherrodbrown.com, his website, and as well as brown.senate.gov. Senator, thank you for being with us today.
Thanks, I appreciate it. Yeah.
Good talking with you. We'll be back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So where do we go from here with these elections? Oh, and Dan Gaynor's going to drop by the Battle of the Super PACs, the Disclose Act, right after this. All right, the leader of the PACs. That must be Karl Rove, right, with his Super PAC? I don't know. Dan Gaynor on the line with us. He is the vice president and T. Boone Pickens free market fellow over at the Business and Media Institute, businessandmedia.org. Dan, welcome back to the program.
It's a pleasure, and at least we had good bumper music. What the heck?
It was. It was brilliant. Shano pulled that out of the pile, a brilliant juxtaposition of events and music. And anyhow, the Senate Democrats... Well, let's even go back 2 years ago, after Citizens United, in the Citizens United ruling, Justice Kennedy wrote the majority opinion in that case. I'm quite sure it was. And Justice Kennedy wrote that any of the harms that would be caused by additional money, invisible money, flowing into the political system as a consequence of Citizens United could be easily remedied by Congress in a way that would not be unconstitutional simply by requiring disclosure of all donors. And so the House of Representatives passed, Nancy Pelosi's House, passed a bill that said, you know, if you're going to give money to one of these 401c, 40, whatever they are, these nonprofit groups, these 501c4s, thank you. 501c3s, I get my 501s mixed up.
Are the regular nonprofits.
Right, yeah. Or to a super PAC or any of these other groups, then you've got to disclose it. That went to the United States Senate where it got more than 50 votes. There were more than 50 people willing to vote for it. And according to the Constitution, that means it became law, but it didn't become law because Republicans blocked it. I don't understand what your side is so afraid of when it comes to transparency in government.
Well, it's funny. This is one of those that, you know, hearing from the left that transparency is good when simultaneously Obama is fighting transparency on Fast and Furious and the states around the country, the higher education institutions are fighting FOIA requests about climate change documents. It's kind of funny. But
yeah.
That said, to answer your question.
Dan, I really don't think anybody's going to take seriously that if that's your argument.
Well, no, I'm starting to answer your question, but it is funny because basically the Obama administration is no more transparent than any other administration. It doesn't like transparency.
So why don't we agree that transparency is a good thing and that the Obama administration should be more transparent and that the billionaires who are handing money off to Karl Rove should be outed?
Well, first of all, this issue is about freedom of speech. It's about freedom of the press.
Freedom of speech does not mean the freedom to operate in secret. That the Supreme Court was very clear about that in Citizens United. Why do the Republicans want to hold the freedom of secrecy?
go back to the founders. One of the, and frankly, to a lot of people watching or listening right now, this is important because this can be used to out you, not just your political donations, but if you post on the web. The New Jersey law, which got written up, got some attention right now, specifically says legislation defines electioneering communications as print, broadcast, cable, satellite, or electronic media that basically talks about campaigns that can be received by 5,000 or more persons in the constituency. So if you post on a popular blog or even, you know, someplace, Huffington Post, even Democratic Underground, theoretically that might have enough people that you will not be allowed to be anonymous.
If you're being paid.
Scary.
If you're being paid, if there's money involved. If you're a paid shill, hey, I would love to know. I'll tell you. You know, we have a very popular message board. I think of all the progressive talk show hosts, we've got the most activity on ours when you look at them in Alexa over at TomHartman.com. And there are people who come in there, and it happens every 4 years. In fact, it happens every 2 years, but it happens big time every 4 years. There are people who come in there and are openly and nakedly promoting candidates, particularly Republican candidates. And then I remember in 2004, there was this one guy who was just like, he was posting 10, 15, 20 posts a day. And then after the election, and he was a decent guy. Everybody got to know him. He was quite transparent about who he was, where he lived. After the election, he joined the Marine Corps and went off to Iraq. He sent us pictures from Iraq. And after the election, he came on our board and he said, thanks so much. You know, I had to join the military because I didn't have a job, but I made so much money posting on your message board because I was being paid for every post that I made. I would love it if somebody who does that for a living has to disclose that. I have no problem with that.
The idea here is to abuse people who don't agree with you. That's the whole premise.
That's not true, Dan. The idea is transparency. You said go back to the founders. You know, in the elections of 1792, the election of 1796, the election of 1800, the election of 1804, the election of 1808. I mean, all of those elections right up until the 1830s, the way that people voted all across the United States is they showed up in a meeting room and they raised their hand. We didn't have secret ballots until the 1820s, 1830s.
Because what happens in a society, particularly we've seen this, the left can't handle the idea of transparency. We saw it with Proposition 8, where people, companies, whole religions were targeted for abuse, harassment, threats of violence, crimes out the wazoo to the point where the...
Dan, I should show you some of the death threats that I get from right-wing sites and right-wingers.
We all get death threats.
If you can't stand the heat, get out of the kitchen, you know, as Harry Truman said.
The heat here is democracy, though. And so what you're saying is if one side can so thoroughly intimidate the other, and this can cut...
What I'm saying is that when billionaires give money to their candidates, they get that money back. Shelley Adelson said it best. It's an investment. He expects to see a return on his investment when they give money to candidates on your side, because those candidates will reduce the billionaires' taxes. On the other hand,
it's hilarious that you're advocating for this when it's basically funded. The whole operation you're talking about is ultimately funded by George Soros.
What operation is that?
This whole push for this so-called transparency is being pushed by Common Cause and other groups that are all funded.
Well, then make him disclose too, Dan. Let's have it be bipartisan.
Because the world will not destroy the people who participate in politics.
Okay. Dan Gaynor, businessmedia.org. You can read all about it. Thank you, Dan.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
I think they're trying to have it both ways, but maybe not. Can you make any sense out of this argument? Give me a call. This is just amazing. Just a little more than a week away, by the way, if you're in the Seattle area and want to wander up to the Seattle area, you can pretty much get anywhere on an airplane these days. You know, I'll be going up that Saturday morning, in fact, from Washington, D.C. This is a week from Saturday, July 21st, Seattle's Progressive Talk, AM 1090. The website, of course, am1090seattle.com, is going to be presenting Showdown 2012, Recapturing Democracy, special keynote address by Congressman Jim McDermott, And then you're going to have a panel with some just really great folks on it. Randy Rhodes, Norman Goldman, Mike Papantonio, Sam Cedar, Ron Reagan, and me. So if you're in the Seattle area and you would like to participate, as what's the old saying? Tickets are limited? Oh, actually, they are. So check it out now at am1090seattle.com. 866-987-THOM, our telephone number. And Frank in Buffalo. Hey, Frank, what's on your mind today?
Thanks for taking my call, and I say that because I told the screener I generally disagree with you.
Yeah, that's why I took you first. I always take people who disagree with me before anybody else.
I do appreciate the fact that you make sensible arguments that I tend to disagree with, and I don't dislike you or anything by any means, and I enjoy listening to your show.
Well, thank you.
I'm a little confused. So here comes the but.
Sure.
The voter ID card thing. Like,
yeah.
When I go to vote, I'm in New York State.
Right.
I walk in, I just say, I'm Frank. They flip open the book, I sign my name, and I walk in and I vote. And I've always thought to myself, what if some John Schmo, whoever from the street, comes walking in and says, hey, I'm Frank, and he signed his name before I get there, and he walks in and votes.
Right.
I don't understand why there's no security there for something that's so important.
Okay, well, let me try to explain it. And I think if you are genuinely open-minded, I am hopeful that at the end of this conversation you will agree with me. The way that we make decisions in this country with regard to things that can be harmful, and you and I both agree that people fraudulently voting is harmful. We're agreed on
Absolutely.
That? Okay.
Absolutely.
So the way that we make decisions about things that might be harmful, for example, a pesticide, or a new chemical that's going to be used as a plasticizer, you know, that might show up in baby food bottles or something like that. The way we make that decision, or pollution in the air, you know, how much mercury should we allow in the air? How much mercury can a coal-fired power plant pump out into the air? Is what's called a cost-benefit ratio. In other words, we look at it and we say, okay, it's going to cost us to eliminate the first 99% of the mercury in the air, it's going to cost $100. You know, per ton. But to get that last percent, it's going to cost $5,000 per ton. And the benefit that we get is certainly worth the $100 per ton for the 99%. But for that last 1%, that benefit is going to just be such a small number of people who are going to be poisoned by that mercury that we're going to allow it into the air. You are you with me on this?
Yeah, I get the
okay.
point.
So you know, I don't like the way that we do our cost-benefit ratios. I disagree with a lot of them. Mercury is one of the ones that I disagree with. But that's how we do it on pretty much everything. We always, literally on everything we do, you and I, if we decide, you know, we're going to drive someplace, cost-benefit. Is it going to be worth the time, the effort, the cost of gasoline? Do I hitchhike? Do I, you know, pretty much every decision we make in our lives boils down to, at the end of the day, some sort of a cost-benefit analysis. So the knowing as we do, since the George W. Bush administration spent 7 years and $74 million having 93 federal prosecutors devote most of their time to looking for fraudulent voting, knowing as we do that nationally there are fewer than 100 cases. In fact, actually last year it was 13, fewer than 100 cases of people who are illegally voting. And the vast majority of those are spouses of people who have Alzheimer's, spouses of people with whom they disagree politically or from whom they are separated, or people who are felons who are trying to vote in a state where felons are not allowed to vote and they didn't realize that that was the law. And because no felon would, you know, go in and say, hi, I'm here to vote illegally, because if you do as a felon, they send you back to jail, right? You lose your parole. So we're talking about fewer than 100 people nationwide out of over 150 million of us who are eligible to vote. So
that's a good explanation.
I've
never heard it.
Why are we willing to pass laws that are so draconian that in the state of Wisconsin, for example, 750,000 people are not going to be able to vote because they don't have a driver's license? You know, that would be older people who have, you know, no longer have the ability to drive. It would be students who don't need to drive. They're living with their parents or they're living on campus. It would be poor people who never were able to get enough money to buy a car. People who live in cities, in big cities with good public transportation system. I don't own a car, for example. You know, I live here in Washington, D.C. I take the metro everywhere. So all of those people, all those constituencies I just described, old people, students, poor people, people who live in big cities, tend to vote Democratic. So the Republican Party comes along and they say, we're going to knock 700,000 people off the voting rolls just in one state, 5.6 billion people nationally. And these are conservative numbers. These are the numbers that the Republicans will acknowledge. We're going to knock 5.5 million people off the voting rolls in order to stop 100 people from voting illegally. And it probably won't stop those 100 people anyway, because most of the vast majority of the voter fraud that they found and prosecuted during the 7 years of the Bush administration was focused on that. And this is why those seven federal prosecutors quit their jobs. Remember when that happened? Because they said, I want to go after criminals rather than voter fraud. Yeah. During that 7 years, the vast majority of those people that they busted did it with absentee ballots. And you don't show ID with an absentee ballot. So it wouldn't even solve that problem.
Your argument sold me. One thing I'll throw back at you that could they just make it, maybe instead of driver's license, most people have some sort of ID, any ID.
Yeah.
Basically just some ID.
Well, it's always been that way in every state. I remember the very first time that I voted. It was in Michigan. I was shortly after I turned 18. The voting age had been dropped by constitutional amendment. And I went in and I had to show my rent. It was a rent receipt or it was a utility receipt. And hang on just a second here. Riverside just threw a window up at me. I got to close it. And you know, I had to see, here's proof that I live here. And, yeah. You know, at the time there was no concern about, you know, are you in America? I mean, you know, it's like, what foreigner wants to vote in the United States? People who are here illegally are trying to hide from the federal government. They're not going to go say, hi, here I am. Let me vote. I mean, well, you know, they're not crazy. So
no, those are great points. I agree with you after listening to it. And so I'm glad you told me that.
Okay. Thank you, Frank.
One other thing.
Okay.
Okay. A lot about the Romney is that he's a billionaire, all right?
And he's a quarter billionaire, a third of a billionaire.
All these guys, I just looked up the list of the richest top 10 people in Congress, and I mean, seven out of 10 of them are Democrats, but that's not
sure.
What I care. It's just, they all seem to be, all those guys are millionaires. Right? Can they even understand what we go through as regular citizens when they're all worth 15, 20, 65, 85, 110 million? John Kerry ran for president, and it didn't seem that he's worth 194 million. I mean, wasn't Kennedy from Boston, another rich billionaire.
Sure. Yeah, Franklin Roosevelt was a rich guy.
And then another one, yes, absolutely. And it just seems to me that is rich bad, is my question.
I don't think so. I'm not, opposed to people being rich. The thing that I'm concerned about, and Thomas Jefferson wrote about this at some length, and you can find the quotes fairly easily, is if rich people are allowed to use their riches to corrupt the small d democratic process in our small r republic. And when that happens, then you have a special interest group, rich people, that has the ability to modify elections in ways that don't necessarily work in the best interests of the nation. And, you know, I don't think that that's right. I am, you know, the Senate traditionally was called the Millionaires Club, but virtually everybody in the Senate was a millionaire. Sherrod Brown isn't. Bernie Sanders isn't. There's a few of them who are not, but virtually everybody in the Senate is a millionaire. This last election, the 2010 election, was the first time in history that more than half of the House of Representatives members had a net worth of over $1 million. And that's because there might be a couple of exceptions of the Tea Party candidates who came in were all millionaires. They all had a fairly high net worth. And there was like some 83 of them or something like that got elected.
Would that be an argument for term limits, Tom?
No, we have term limits. They're called elections. And the reason why I'm opposed to term limits is, and I can tell you, living here in Washington, D.C. has really opened my eyes to this. When somebody comes into Congress and they don't know, they don't have a clue what's going on, and they're just thrown into the mix, they look around and they say, somebody tell me how this thing works. How do you make laws? How do you do a bill? Hold my hand. Teach me how this works. And if there's not somebody who's been there for 5, 10, 15, 20 years who has some kind of institutional memory, then they're going to find that person, right? They're going to find somebody who knows how it's done. And increasingly, as Congress gets turned over faster and faster and faster, and in fact, this is the thing you've seen with the Tea Partiers, most of these Tea Partiers are now taking big money from the lobbyists. The lobbyists have become the permanent infrastructure in Washington, D.C. And in states where you have term limits, you find that the lobbyists end up having enormously more power in those states where there's term limits than they do in states where there aren't, because the only institutional memory that exists that survives the term limits are the lobbyists. And I don't think that that's a good thing. And there's lobbyists on, you know, whether it's the Sierra Club or whether it's ExxonMobil. You know, I don't think that they should be the permanent infrastructure. Have we agreed again, Frank?
Nice conversation. I'll continue to listen.
Okay, good talking with you. Thanks for calling. We need more Republicans like you, Frank. We'll be back. Tom Hartman here with you. 45 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And if you're in the Seattle area, check out AM 1090 Seattle at AM1090Seattle.com. It's going to be a lot of fun. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Fair and only slightly unbalanced. Oh, I love Fox so-called news. John in Oak Park, Illinois. Hey, John, thanks for listening to WCPT. What's up?
Look, I got a complaint.
Okay.
Hard to believe, but I'm a loyal listener, but I do have a complaint. I'm wondering why you're endorsing the Republican Party. I mean, just today, your own words today, you said, somewhere along the lines of a quote, the last Republican president we had was Eisenhower.
Who was actually elected without fraud.
Thing today?
Yeah, I did say that. In the election of 52, I personally believe, although I was only 1 year old at the time, but I believe that Eisenhower was elected legitimately in the election of 52 and the election of 56.
Then I agree. I was a little older than I was born in 46. Mm-hmm. The point I'm driving at is this. The Republican Party that Eisenhower represented died with him.
Yeah, it died about the same time my dad did, you know, a couple of years back. I mean, it's just
my condolences. But
yeah, well, thank you. He died a Republican.
Why do you keep calling him GOP? I think you should change that name and quit endorsing him and call him GOBBC.
Okay, well, and that stands for
Old Boys Billionaire Club.
Oh, the Old Boys, good Old Boys Billionaire Club. There you go. That's a good one. John, thank you. You are absolutely right. I realize that you're taking me to task as good natured and you know, and that we agree that probably Dwight Eisenhower was at least a reasonable, you know, that was back in the days when Democrats and Republicans actually had reasonable debates. But it's really a sad thing when you have to go back to the Eisenhower administration to find a Republican who was legitimately elected president of the United States. John, thank you for the call. Much appreciated. Marcia in Raleigh, North Carolina. Hey, Marcia, what's up?
Hi, it's Marcia.
Marcia, my apologies.
That's all right. Yesterday you had, the day before yesterday, a gentleman who called about making the elections a national holiday,
mm-hmm.
and you talked about instant runoff voting, not being sure that it's for federal offices. I don't know whether that's true or not, because I'm working on the Equal Access Amendment,
mm-hmm.
Which covers fixing all the issues that have to deal with voting. So far, we've got equal ballot access, equal time for the debates, public money for public office, because I don't understand why we would use any money for the elections, because that seems like that would be like if a cop pulled me over and I could give him money, or a judge, or
right.
It seems like giving a legislator money is the same thing.
Yeah, I agree.
Paper ballots. I'm sorry.
No, I absolutely agree. In fact, just a quick story. I was in Mexico about 20 years ago. I owned a travel agency at the time. We had a client who was booking a resort down there, and on the airport whatever city it was, Acapulco or whatever. A cop pulled us over. I was the only guy driving on the street. I was driving the exact same speed as everybody else, but he pulled us over because I was obviously not Mexican. And he said, okay, here's the ticket, and you're going to have to come back in 2 weeks, to show up for this. And I'm like, I won't be here in 2 weeks. And he's like, well, then I have to take you to jail. And I said, isn't there an alternative? And he said, yeah, you can give me $50 now. So I gave him $50, and thinking that I was paying the fine. And he took the ticket and tore it up in front of me to, like, you know, prove to me that I had... that I didn't have to worry. It dawned on me. I just bribed this guy, you know.
Exactly.
I mean, you know, you're exactly right. That's what these Republicans are doing, these right wingers.
I mean, I really think that we should not have any money. I mean, I know the Republicans make the case that it's your money. You should be able to spend it any way you want. But I think we should say not for public office. Public office is not a private institution. It's a commons, as you say.
It's a sacred
and
trust.
Anybody who wants to work on that, I have it at that Facebook. I have been trying to get it to you. I've got it to Shahid at BORDC, Bill of Rights.
Mm-hmm.
And he said it was a good start, but he says that he thinks it's something in the future. And I feel like if we're working on Citizens United, that's not enough. Like you're talking about these ballot boxes. Paper ballots, just a tiny bit. That's the one where you...
So how do people find it, Marcia, how do people find it on Facebook? How do they find the work that you're doing?
Equal Access Amendment.
Okay. So go to Facebook and search Equal Access Amendment. And your Facebook page will come up. Marcia, I wish you the very best on this. We need more activists like you out there in the fields.
One little thing for me. I want to scratch your back. You tell the stories. You make my jaw drop open. How you remember a case in the years and you go back, you need to make a correspondence course and sell it.
Thank you. I've sort of done that. I've written 23 books. Marcia, thank you for your kind words. It's much appreciated. Thank you very much. Thank you. I've got to move along here. Carol in Republic, Michigan, that's in the Upper Peninsula in the UP.
Yes, sir.
That's great. Hi, Carol.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
In reference to your previous conversations of sort of the corrupt politics and the dismantling of Michigan. You're familiar, of course, with the Upper Peninsula and its beauty.
Oh, yeah. I lived a summer up there, actually, when I was 17 years old.
It's a national treasure. A lot of people don't.
Yeah, I lived
in a
teepee
about.
Out in the Cherokee National Forest there.
How fantastic.
Yeah. Newbury. Newbury?
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
I'm over in the central part and in Marquette County and...
Yep.
I'm in close proximity to huge mining companies and huge logging operations. In fact, in the 20 years that I've lived here, I've seen vast tracts of deep forests that held incredible species of plants and animals that I'm not sure were all logged be disappeared. They've been taken out logging truck after logging truck over the last, I would say, very hard hit in the last 10 years. And Kennecott mining operation has opened up, and they are owned by Rio Tinto, and they have just opened up within the last year along the shoreline of Lake Superior in Marquette County.
Mm-hmm.
And over the weekend, as many of us suspected would happen, there was a spill of hydrochloric acid.
Oh, my.
And
you're suggesting that this all has to do with the corruption of politics in Michigan by big money interests?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Not at all surprised. Carol, we're out of time. Thank you for the call, and thanks for your comments, and thanks for watching us there on Free Speech TV up in the Upper Peninsula. We will be back. We're gonna get into this whole thing and what's going on. Adam Porton from Wisconsin Wave will be with us.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
So it's a pretty rare thing. Welcome back, by the way, I get an email in response to it. I click on a link and go send money. But I did so this morning. I got this email from Wisconsin Wave about how they were trying to hand recount the vote in Wisconsin. And I'm like all about, let's find out what's really going on. Even if we discover that everything is fine, let's find out. Adam Porton is with us. He is a coordinator with Wisconsin Wave. WisconsinWave.org is the website. Adam, welcome to the program.
Good to be with you.
Tell me what's going on there.
Sure. So it's the kind of situation where we just want to know how people voted. And in any election that uses electronic machines to either tabulate votes or in some cases to directly record votes, we don't really know until we hand count, and that's kind of the premise behind this project.
Now, I understand that the reason why you guys are asking the local, counties or districts or
county clerks.
County clerks. You're asking the local county clerks to keep the ballots, the paper ballots that were filled out, that were then counted by machine, and then the machine, and then were tabulated by machines, by privatized voting machines. You're asking them to hang on to these things because apparently during the recount election, where the Democrat ended up winning the Senate by a slim margin, some of your folks decided to look at the rest of the ballot. Do I have that right?
Sure. So, yeah, what sort of sparked this effort was observers watching the process decided, during a recount, it's very interesting, the ballot, an official recount usually has the ballot simply going back through the machine.
Right.
It's kind of shocking that's how that's done. But it was an opportunity to view the ballots one by one as they went in. And observers monitoring that recount process decided to check the governor's race totals. And they found significant and consistent disparities in the wards they were able to recount. And that's what prompted us to want to look further to see if this is an outlier, if this was something that was truly systemic across possibly even the entire state.
So what you were finding when you were actually looking at the ballots was that the ballots and what the machine said the ballots said and what the ballots actually said was different. It was different how?
It was different in that in the precincts that were able to be recounted in this way by these observers, there was a disparity in those totals between their totals and the split between Tom Barrett and Governor Walker and what the official totals on election night, those totals which, yes, came from machines, were saying. And it was always in one direction. You know, Walker always had a few more votes than the official totals than the observers came up with. And it was that consistent pattern that was the huge red flag. We know this is possible in theory, but this was sort of a flag that, you know, maybe there's something more here. And the point, I think, is that, you know, we don't know. But democracy is important enough that, you know, we should find out. And the only way to know is to hand count the ballots. And luckily, that's something that is possible if enough volunteers and enough money are able to be, put to use for this kind of project.
Do they use Diebold and GEMS? Are they still using that in Wisconsin, or are they using that in Wisconsin? Do you know what kind of tabulators they use?
I believe those two manufacturers are present here. I mean, as you know, voting machines vary often city by city.
Right.
So, for example, in Dane County, where Madison, Wisconsin is, the machines are what are called OptiScan machines. They're paper ballots run through an electronic tabulator. And many counties, and about maybe 25% of the counties, they're touchscreen. In other counties, they're OptiScans that are Diebold. So it's quite a gamut, meaning that there's really no way to know if there's a problem with one kind of machine. Then there could be problems with many other kinds of machines.
Right. This is back about 3 or 4 years ago. Tina Brown had a TV show on CNBC. It was called Topic A with Tina Brown. She's now she runs the Daily Beast website and Newsweek. And she had a day off, and she asked Howard Dean to fill in for her. And he had on as a guest Bev Harris. And we've edited out the pauses while they're doing things. This was originally a 90-second-long clip. But just listen to this conversation between – this was done on live national television, Howard Dean being directed by Bev Harris. He's working with a Diebold tabulator, and Diebold uses a vote counting program that they own called the GEMS program. And so here it is.
Bev sat me down, and in a few short seconds, I was amazed at what I could do.
All right, Bev, show me how to do this.
Go to My Computer and just click that. Go to Local Disk C. Go to GEMS, which is the name of the Diebold program. We're going to go to Local DB, which stands for Local Database. That's where they keep the votes. And by the way, this has been out on the Internet for ages now. Go to Central Tabulator Votes, which is the database we just looked at. And then go to the sum of the candidates, which is that table. You see we have 800 votes here for you and 400 for Lex Luthor. Let's just flip those. We'll make that 400, and we'll give 100 votes to Tiger. Let's just see what happened here. We'll go back into GEMS the legitimate way. You're the county supervisor. You're checking on the progress of your election. And as you can see now, Howard Dean only has 500 votes. Lex Luthor has 900, and Tiger Woods has 100 votes. Mm. We just edited an election. It took us 90 seconds.
We just edited an election, and it took us 90 seconds. Is that what you're suggesting might have happened in Wisconsin?
You know, I really hope that didn't happen. And I just want to stress this, you know, the group I work with, The Wave, we're one member of a coalition, and the intention here is to be nonpartisan and to act in the interest of democracy. But we know from folks like the ones you just played that this is possible, and it's not just in theory. Many computer scientists and other experts have demonstrated and practiced how this can happen, and the situation has only gotten worse since 2004 when many observers think a similar thing might have happened in Ohio.
Right.
Their exit polls showed John Kerry ahead all day, and the machine totals told a very different story. And, you know, there's always been speculation, and we don't want that to be the case here. But, again, we want to know in the interest of democracy
right.
and election integrity, and we're going to try to find out.
You know, and I totally support that effort. We're talking with Adam Porton. He's with Wisconsin Wave, wisconsinwave.org, and this is a group that is committed to, you know, small d democracy in Wisconsin. In fact, how would you describe your group, Adam?
Sure. So we actually formed right before the big protest last year as a project to, you know, fight the austerity agenda, to fight the corporatization agenda, and, yeah, to take back our democracy for the people. We built a coalition with a lot of great local unions and community groups and you know, participated in the uprising along with everyone else. And we've taken up election integrity because we saw kind of a vacuum. You know, a lot of groups do great poll monitoring and protect the right to vote, fight voter ID, et cetera. But there's not a lot of organizing that usually happens even when things are found. And so, you know, what we're hoping to do here is do that organizing. In this case, that means recruiting volunteers and sending them to county clerk's offices around the state and having them count those votes and then seeing what we find.
Are you getting resistance from the state or from any of the county clerks?
Well, we're getting some, and it's mixed. It's interesting. Some are charging, and that kind of led to the fundraising push. Some are charging what we consider exorbitant and you know, onerous fees,
right.
Simply to access the ballots, claiming you know undue staff time and stuff like that. Some are being very friendly, but you know all have to comply to some degree because open records requests are you know a very serious sort of. Legal inquiry that have to be respected, and the ballots have to be preserved until the requests are either denied
right.
or
fine. Adam, this shouldn't even be a question in this democracy. You know, there should not be private corporate machines between our vote and our elections and the outcome of our elections. But tragically, there are. And so I congratulate you on the great work that you guys are doing, wisconsinwave.org. Check it out. Adam Porton, thank you, Adam, for being with us.
No, for following the story. Appreciate it.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We'll be back with more. Did you know Mitt Romney? Either he's lying or he's a felon. One or the other. You pick. Right.
I'll show you just how cool scientists are. We study everything, that's why we're cool. And yes, most of us got high marks in school. And proud.
It's our Geeky Science Rocks, the 2.5 minutes that Sean and Louise give me every week where I could actually talk about science, which is one of my favorite topics. And then we'll get back to politics. This is amazing. Science Daily, the more gray matter you have, the more altruistic you are. Altruistic as in wanting to give things to people. They looked at this particular area. It's a junction between the parietal and the temporal lobes. And the temporal lobes is the side of the brain. It's where we process mostly speech and sound. Wernicke's region on the right-hand side. I always get my right and left mixed up because the brain reverses them. Anyhow, Wernicke's region on one side processes music. I'm pretty sure it's the right brain. And, yeah, and then on the left brain, you've got Broca's region, which processes language. And then the parietal is just a little above that, and this connection between the two, and which leads into the sensory motor strip, you know, all the ways that we experience the world. This junction point of these two parts of the brain in people who are highly altruistic, that is, they have empathy for other people and they're willing to help other people, they have more gray matter there. Now, this is a fascinating fact. This is not disputed now. This is a fact. What is in dispute or is being questioned is which happened first. because our brains are highly plastic. If you look at the brain of somebody on a PET scan or any kind of good brain imaging of somebody who, for example, has been for years and years and years a guitar player, what you will see is that the right part of the sensory motor strip, the right part of the brain which controls the left hand, where the fingers are being controlled, is actually larger. There's more gray matter there. There's more brain matter there than there is on the other side, because the left hand has been doing all that fret stuff all these years, right? Whereas the right hand has just been going boing, 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 assuming that they're playing that kind of music. On the other hand, if they're picking with their right hand and they're fretting with their left hand, then you'll see both sides of the, in other words, you see the consequence of experience in the brain. So the question that the brain scientists are now asking, now that they've discovered that people who are more altruistic are, have more gray matter in this junction point between the parietal and the temporal lobes, is that the result of, at a young age, being trained, learning how to empathize with other people, how to experience other people's emotions, and then that helps build that part of the brain, which then makes you naturally more altruistic? Or are people born that way with more gray matter there, and therefore they behave more altruistically? Is it nature or nurture? Nobody knows. But I find it fascinating. So anyway, that's our geeky science for the day. Dan in Lincoln, Nebraska. Hey, Dan, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's up?
Hey, Tom, thanks for taking my call. I guess I just got on when you were talking about Chuck Hagel and how he upset Nixon.
Yeah, that election of, I think it was 2002, the Washington Post, maybe it was 2000, the Washington Post, Hagel had been the president of the voting machine company in Nebraska, and then
he assumed ownership of it from McCarthy and company, and he was chairman of it and stepped down as chairman, and ran for office and upset the former governor Nelson, who of course is in office now, representing us well. But he was the president and owner of
the voting machine company, and he did not disclose that. And when I was writing about that in 2002, 2003. I mean, you can find it; it's still online. You can find the link. And a fellow by the name of Alexander, I don't remember if that was his first or last name, but he was one of the writers over at The Hill, and he broke this story. And when he was about to break the story, Hagel's office sent lawyers over to threaten him, basically, to say, don't expose this story, that Chuck Hagel used to run this voting machine company. And when the election happened, the Washington Post ran a story, and there's a link again. You can find this. It's in the Common Dreams archives, commondreams.org. The Washington Post ran a story. They said that it was the upset election of the year, because areas of Nebraska that had never before voted for a Republican, large, areas, student areas, African-American areas, all of a sudden they were voting for this Republican, Chuck Hagel. It was amazing. It was the upset, the nationwide, the biggest upset.
Yeah, I guess him and Diebold are the two companies that manufacture a lot of the voting.
Yeah, that was that company became what is known as ES&S. I'm pretty sure. So, Dan, thanks for the call, and thanks for bringing that topic up. Kerry in Gulfport, Mississippi. Hey, Kerry, what's up?
Hey, not too much, Tom. I was listening the other day. I happen to live in the state of Mississippi, which disenfranchises ex-felons.
Okay.
And they were talking about ex-felons, and the reason that ex-felons couldn't vote was the fact that we could somehow, control politicians.
Right. I don't get that. I think that when somebody's paid their debt to society, when they're done with their parole or probation, they should be fully integrated back into society. To discriminate against somebody because they got caught committing a crime. And I say that very intentionally, because a lot of Americans commit crimes and don't get caught because they got caught committing a crime and paid their dues on that, paid the price for it. I think that they should be, y'all in Mississippi, ex-felons in Mississippi should get your vote back. I think it's wrong.
Well, I agree with that.
So,
I think it's a violation of my civil rights.
Yeah. So, what argument do they make?
The argument that they made is they said that if an ex-felon, you know, who might have been, you know, a high-level drug dealer, you know, got to vote, somehow he could control politicians.
Like, there's so many ex-felons that's a voting block?
Yeah.
I don't get it.
Carrie,
thank you for the call. It makes no sense to me. It seems to me like it's just more right-wing punishment of people. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Oh, and I never did get to, is John Kerry a felon or just a liar? And did you hear this new ad of his? He's calling the president a liar. Bad and the very, very ludibriously ugly. Brought to you by EdisonFactor.com, food for your brain. The good. Texas District Court Judge Gisela Triana. On Monday, Triana ruled that the atmosphere must be protected for public use, just like water. In a ruling, Triana said that air and the atmosphere are public trusts and therefore must be protected for the well-being of the public. Legal analysts are now saying that Triana's decision could help attorneys in the future who argue climate change cases that are designed to force states or the federal government to cut emissions. The decision is even more important in Texas, considering that Governor Goodhair Rick Perry is one of the strongest opponents of the idea that fossil fuels cause climate change. Kudos to Judge Triana for giving a big win to the protection of our environment. The bad. The U.S. Olympic Committee. The Olympics are just 2 weeks away. And over the course of a month, Americans will be filled with patriotism as they watch their favorite athletes compete. But our athletes won't be wearing American-made clothing when they're walking the streets of London. That's because the official uniforms of this year's Olympians are made in China. The uniforms made by Ralph Lauren are very snazzy, but there's nothing American about them. You would think that American Olympians would be representing the best of our country in every possible way, including by showing off our manufacturing sector, but no. The U.S. Olympic Committee decided to rely on cheap labor from overseas rather than putting Americans to work. And the very, very ugly Colorado Secretary of State Scott Gessler. Despite seeing all the uproar caused by Florida's voting purge of thousands of eligible voters, Republican Gessler is intent on making sure Colorado does the exact same thing. On Tuesday, he sent a letter to the Department of Homeland Security asking that they help verify the status of 5,000 registered voters. And just like Florida, Gessler says he will sue the DHS if they refuse to help. Colorado has a large population of Latinos, and they are the ones largely being targeted by the state's voter purge because the Latinos tend to vote Democratic. Just like in Florida, Republicans in Colorado are trying to rig the election for Mitt Romney by preventing Democrats from voting, and that is very, very ugly. Okay, I had John Kerry on the brain. I was still thinking of the 2004 election when we hit the last break. And I'm like, oh, is John Kerry a felon or a liar? No. I meant Mitt Romney. My apologies. I drank a half a cup of coffee earlier. I got to stay away from that stuff. Mitt Romney either lied in federal filings. This is the lawyer for the Obama campaign. This is on the record statement by Bob Bauer, the lawyer for the Obama campaign. Mitt Romney either lied in federal filings that show he worked at Bain Capital through 2002 and could be guilty of a felony, which is lying on your SEC filings, or he has lied to the American people in saying that he left the company in 1999. This is serious business. Either Mitt Romney, through his own words and his own signature, was misrepresenting his position at Bain to the SEC, which is a felony, or he was misrepresenting his position of Bain to the American people to avoid responsibility for some of the consequences of his investments, including layoffs and the outsourcing of jobs. It's a real character and trust issue. And what's particularly interesting is Romney is running ads right now saying that he worked at Bain for 25 years. He started Bain in 77. 25 years later is 2002, I believe. Actually, I should go back and check the math on that. Where did I see that? Oh, it was the Daily Kos. They've got a whole piece on this, which was just fascinating. And, did Mitt accidentally tell the truth? Romney started working at Bain in 1977. 25 years later would be 2002. Right. He's got a TV ad out there saying, I worked at Bain for 25 years. Not quite without accent. 25 years later, 2002. But now he's saying, well, you know, all those offshorings and layoffs and stuff, because that stuff really picked up. After the 2000 election, George W. Bush, you know, Republicans back in office, hey, let's do more of that. Art in St. Padre Island, Texas. Hey, Art, what's on your mind today?
I was telling your producer or...
our call screener. Paul?
Screener, yes. That it's very interesting that a lot of the places offshore that Mitt Romney has his accounts are places that have casinos and gambling. And it's interesting to see that a lot of... he's having problems now. Today was an interesting day for him. But has anybody ever gone to see if there's any connection with the casinos and him? Because when he told Perry, I'll bet you $10,000, that was a giveaway that he's done that before. It wasn't the first time he's ever...
oh, that's
that.
Interesting. So you're suggesting that Mitt Romney might have a gambling problem like Bill Bennett did?
Well, I'm thinking that he may have money in the casinos, in gambling. That may be an investment. And a Mormon's not supposed to gamble, is not supposed to drink caffeine, is not supposed to drink alcohol.
Mormons are not supposed to gamble?
I don't think so, no. I'm almost positive they're not supposed to.
Then why didn't his church come after him when he said, I'll bet you $10,000 to Rick Bell? Maybe they did.
I don't know. There's a lot of things that people should come out after him, but they
don't. That's very, very interesting. Well, you know, being the owner of a casino company and taking money from foreign governments, doing that doesn't seem to be a problem on the Republican side. Shelley Adelson, the billionaire who funded the Newt Gingrich campaign and then the little Ricky's campaign, Ricky Santorum. Shelley Adelson makes his money or made most of his money with casinos in Macau. Macau is an island off the coast of China that is a protectorate of China, the way that Puerto Rico is a protectorate of the United States. And so basically it was Chinese money. And that Shelley Adelson was using to promote these Republican candidates, and now he's given that money to Mitt Romney. So, very interesting. We need to check into that. Thank you, Art, for the heads up on that.
The other thing, also, it's great to hear such an intelligent person on the air.
Well, thank you.
Like fresh air.
Thank you very kindly, Art. I appreciate your kind words. Wayne in Reading, Pennsylvania, and not at all necessary, by the way. Please don't everybody start calling and telling me how smart I am. It'll go to my head. Wayne in Reading, Pennsylvania. What's on your mind, Wayne?
Hey, I find it very interesting that the Republicans are saying that, these new voter ID laws have nothing to do with, you know, clearing people off the books. They're saying they're trying to eliminate fraud by, you know, requiring ID, but yet they opposed the free national ID, which would have given every legal citizen an ID, and it wouldn't even be a problem then.
Yeah. Well, and you know, a lot of us on the left agreed with them in that opposition. I don't want to live in a country where I walk down the street and somebody comes up, some authority figure comes up and says, may I see your papers, please?
Well, I understand that, but at the same time, you know, if you're going to say, well, you've got to have ID, you got to have ID, well, then, you know, shouldn't they support making sure that everybody has an ID?
Yeah, you're right. You've done a very, very good job of quantifying their hypocrisy. Thank you for that, Wayne. Well said. Mason in La Center, Kentucky. Hey, Mason, what's up?
How you doing, Tom? I was wanting to know, to what extent do you feel that... are you there?
Yeah, I'm listening.
Okay, I couldn't hear you. It went completely silent. I was wondering, to what extent does the impact of the voting machines and how the to what extent the Republican Party will go to
Yeah, you got to turn your TV down or you'll get horribly distracted, Mason, because there's a time delay. Your question was, to what extent is it quantifiable that there has been a redshift? There has been a change in the output from the voting machines versus, you know, what we think that we voted for. And if you go and Google redshift in quotes, and you will find all kinds of articles, most from the 2004 election. This was when it was really, really quite obvious. But you can look for graphics of redshift, and you can see the charts and things, where in all these swing states, the exit polls and the pre-election polling was showing in the 2004 election that John Kerry was going to win, and then the voting machines showed that George Bush ran. And that's referred to as redshift, that shifting of the votes from blue to red. And there's virtually no blue shift. So as voting machines have proliferated across the United States, and they started in 98, and then in 2002 with the Help America Vote Act, that put them into every single precinct, virtually every precinct in the country for the 2004 election, where George Bush was standing for re-election. As a consequence of that, then you saw in the 2004 election some fairly massive redshift. So you can track that down. It shouldn't be really hard. David in Kanoe, Hawaii?
Kaneohe.
Kaneohe. Okay, great. Thank you, David. I got a minute to the break. What's up?
The issue is, have you heard the Democratic billionaires aren't stepping up to contribute to super PACs because they don't want to get into extreme negative ads?
I've heard that they're not contributing to super PACs because they don't think the super PACs are wise or ethical or the right thing. It wouldn't surprise me if some of them don't want to be associated with negative ads either.
But I would say they should be doing something like trying to reach the low information voters by sponsoring spots on like American Idol, Dancing with the Stars, those kind of things.
I agree. And sporting events.
Like, just imagine, Bill Maher's dinner plate he shows, that shows that most of the dinner representing the national budget actually goes to defense.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot that Americans don't know about what's going on in America. David, thank you for the call and for the excellent suggestion. We need to get our billionaires a little more energy. Some of them are doing quite well, but more, please.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
So do you think that Romney lied to us all these years or committed a felony and lied to the SEC?
From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming to the USA.
It will happen. Trust me. It will happen. Carol in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Democracy will come. Carol in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. What's up, Carol?
Hi, Tom. Love your show.
Thank you.
I'm calling with regard to the voter fraud. And, Pennsylvania, I'm worried about Pennsylvania this year. I work the elections in my local township.
Mm-hmm.
And I know for a fact there's no voter fraud going on. We know in the small towns, we know most of the people that come in anyway.
Sure.
But you cannot vote unless your name's on that list. When you come in and you say your name and you have to sign,
mm-hmm.
I don't know. That's how it is in Pennsylvania anyhow.
Yeah. Yeah, your signature has to match. That's how it was in Michigan.
Yeah.
That's how, every state I've ever lived in.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You showed your ID when you were 18 or whenever you registered to vote.
Right.
And there's no reason to show it every time. All it's going to do is back up everything. It's going to be a mess this election.
Yep.
I have chosen, I'm not even going to work. I refuse to ID everybody in the primaries.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm not going to vote. I'm going to vote. I'm voting absentee ballot.
Yeah.
It is the only way. There is a paper trail.
More and more people are doing that. The one problem with that, Carol, is in a lot of states, absentee ballots are not counted until after all the main vote is counted. And
right.
If it looks like there's a majority, they don't get around to opening the absentee ballots.
But at least there's a paper trail. Open them at our...
Yeah, I mean, in Ohio, when John Kerry conceded the election, there were still 186,000 unopened absentee ballots that had not been opened.
I know, and I'm afraid that's what's going to happen to PA this year, but I refuse to be part of it. I'm not going to ID everybody that comes in the door.
Good on you.
I just I'm just not doing it, and that's the only other way I can vote.
Yeah.
Without showing my ID, so that's what I'm doing, and it has been since they pushed the Diebold machines down our throat. Back,
This is all one fabric. The voting machines that George Bush shoved down our throats in 2002 with HAVA, the voter ID laws that the American Legislative Exchange Council ALEC has been promoting.
Exactly.
It's all one
it
fabric.
For years.
It is Republican election fraud. And you know the way that you know that Republicans are doing something wrong is they accuse Democrats of it. You know,
exactly.
You got Fox News 24/7 going, oh, these Democrats, they're going to try and steal the election. So now we know what you're thinking about. Carol, thank you for the call. Thank you for and thank you for volunteering to be an election official. That's a big deal. Lee in Trumansburg, New York, watching on Free Speech TV on Dish Network. Hey, Lee, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to bring up the fact that apparently they buried the fact that Mitt Romney voted illegally in Massachusetts when he was living in California.
Yeah, he bragged about it in the primaries.
Yeah. Why did they let him get away with that? That's an illegal act.
Well, because he's a Republican.
Well, I don't care if he is a Republican. I'm an Eisenhower Republican, and I wouldn't put up with it.
Okay. Well, good on you, Lee. Thank you for the call. I mean, I find that, actually, I think that that's a good, serious question. Romney, in the debates, went out of his way to say that he stayed registered to vote in Massachusetts because he wanted to vote against Ted Kennedy. But he was living in California at the time. He was registered to vote in his son's unfinished basement. You're telling me you can do that? I thought that was illegal. Lane in Mesa, Arizona. Hey, Lane, what's up? Thanks for listening to Sirius.
Hey, Tom. Hey, good to talk to you. Enjoy the show.
Thank you.
I wanted to relay a story. A friend of mine was sent out before the Kerry Bush election there to pick up a load of ballots in the Denver area.
Mm-hmm.
And got there the night before, and then when he got up in the morning to go load, the broker called him, or not the broker, but his boss called him and told him, that he doesn't need to pick those up. That load has been canceled, you know. You may have remembered about 25,000 ballots not showing up in the poor suburbs of Denver. There was a small story about it, you know.
Uh-huh.
The election was already lost, but so it didn't really go too far. But after he had canceled that and been assigned to another destination, the actual broker called him, which really never happens, you know, unless, you know, you're supposed to have delivered something and it's 2 days late, you know,
right.
When the broker says, I want to talk to the driver
right.
You know, to find out where my goods are, you know. So there's just more than one way, they're going to try and steal an election. I mean,
are you saying that this driver was told not to deliver these ballots to the presumably Democratic leaning precincts by somebody who was not actually his boss, but pretending to be?
No. His boss actually told him he got there the night before,
right.
So unload in the morning. Okay.
Right.
Okay, and his boss told him that morning.
It's been canceled.
Okay, yes. And then the broker, okay, the man who would place the order.
Right.
Okay, called him and asked him what political affiliation he was.
Really?
Yes. You know, and he told him, you know, he was an anarchist. You know, I mean, he's that kind of guy.
I love it.
To him, it was just a load, you know?
Yeah, I got it. Lane, thanks for sharing the story with us. I appreciate the call. Terry in Newburg, Oregon. Terry, we have just a minute left in the show, and it's all yours.
Well, Tom, thank you. I just had a thought that it's obvious that what the Republicans are doing with these voter ID laws and whatnot are nothing more than suppression, since every qualified voter already has an ID, and that's a precinct card.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't understand what the problem is here, other than, again, they're just trying to suppress the vote.
That's right.
And to their favor. We, like I say, I have a precinct card. It's in my wallet now, and I can show it on request.
Yeah, the only way these guys can win an election is by lying about the issues and rigging the elections. And they've been doing it for decades, and they're going to do it again. Thanks for the call, Terry. Coming up tomorrow, it's Friday. Of course, that's Brunch with Bernie. Senator Bernie Sanders will be here taking your calls at our National Town Hall meeting, Plus, anything goes tomorrow on Front Town Hall Friday. What do you want to talk about? And the best of the rest of you is, don't forget, democracy begins when you show up. Get out there and occupy something. Tag your it. See you tomorrow.
Been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to tomhartman.com.